We've all got the capacity to be a Winston Churchill, to be an entrepreneur, to be a great father, to be a great leader in the community. Those are just as beneficial.
All right, welcome to a really fun edition of Do Hard Stuff. Man, I have Bob Skinstock with me. Bob, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, JW. How are you, mate? Nice to see your face. Bright and breezy in the morning for you. I know you're a morning man, but it's really good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Well, just a quick little bio. You're a former South African rugby union player known for your dynamic role as a loose forward and your time captaining the Springboks or the Box. Born in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, and raised in Cape Town. You made your international debut in 97 and went on to earn 42 caps, which I just learned are national games. And in post-retirement, you've really done a lot with media entrepreneurship. You're a owner of a team and also do a lot in the business world. And should I call you Bob or Bobby?
Well, that's been a debate for many years. So Bobby, as you can imagine, I was christened Bobby after Bobby Angel, the country singer.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
And then my grand stepped in while everybody had left the room, and my grand stepped in and changed my christening to Robert because she thought I might want a grown-up name when I got older. So my parents were cross with her, but it all died down, and then I got called Bobby all the way through. And Bob or Bobby, it's become more Bob as I get older. But that, I don't know, maybe that's a function of not being a teenager with a big smiley face running around on a sports field.
Isn't that funny? Because you're right. You kind of see Bob or Robert as a successful businessman, but it's, hey Bobby, how you doing? that's like your mate, right? That's somebody you kind of hang out with. Yeah, that's like, well,
exactly.
I have to, and in all transparency, it's interesting. When I met you, I met through our good friend, Ibrahim Vanderwalt, and invited me to dinner. He didn't tell me who you were. And, we just showed up. I thought, nice. You know, I was with my son and there was four of us. We had a really nice dinner in London. And it was interesting afterwards. I think Ibrahim said something about you played rugby. And the crazy thing is, I mentioned it to somebody in my office, which, you know, our office is in Harare, Zimbabwe, and they go, "You met Bobby Skinstad?" And I was like, "Yeah." I saw it on social media. It was on our LinkedIn or something. I said, "Have dinner or whatnot." And they're like, "How in the world did you get his autograph?" And I was thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know who this is, right? And I was like, I did not know exactly who it was. So then I had to call Ibrahim back. I'm like, hey, you got to fill me in. You need to advance me. And then even funnier, my son goes and does some research, and he's a big sports fan, and he does some research. He was like, oh my goodness, Dad, I didn't realize who we were having dinner with. So which probably made it more fun, right? We just kind of got to really, really laugh and talk a little bit. But so tell me, go back a little bit. I mean, you know, we were talking a little beforehand, and obviously around this Do Hard Stuff, I love hearing stories about people, how they grew up, the sports they played, the controversies, the difficulties, the obstacles, because I know in my life, all that stuff has better shaped me for who I am today as a husband, a father, a Christ follower, a business person, a leader. All of those things really help you become a better person as you go forward, right? So tell me about, I mean, you were born in Bulawayo, but you moved to Cape Town and raised in Cape Town. Is that correct?
Yeah, between Cape Town and Durban. So I mean, I appreciate the question very much, because a lot of people at that time, you know, South Africa was still suffering from international sanctions. We were steeped in what we call apartheid, which was a terrible, terrible sort of racist divide of the country. My dad was quite active in as a sort of a student voter, student activist, if you want. And then he did his final year of his qualifications in what was Rhodesia, because He went up to study at a specialist school in Salisbury, which became
Right, yeah.
Harare when Rhodesia became Zimbabwe, and he got conscripted and he ended up fighting in the war. I was born in 1976, so my mum was at home and he was out there on active duty. And then once the war was over, I think 1980, anyone who'd been active in the war, and not on Mugabe's side or on the local side, got asked to leave the country. And so we got piled into the car, into a Peugeot 403 or something, piled up with everything that they could squeeze into the car, and I think $250 and sent away. Good luck out there. And my dad
Wow.
had qualified and then worked, and we went to South Africa. The amazing thing, he was never ever bitter about anything except the fact that he was stopped from living in this country that he found so beautiful and the people so warm and friendly, etc. And we can go into a million debates as to why that all happened, but that's not for now. But we made our way in South Africa. We settled back down in Cape Town. My dad worked at a local hospital, and then there was a job actually outside of Durban that he got as a general practitioner, GP practice, and they needed some extra hands. And we moved up to Durban, which is where I went to school, and then I went back to Cape Town, outside Cape Town, Stellenbosch University for post-school studies. So always around South and Southern Africa, and I love that part of the world. I love the people from this part of the world, and it's amazing how many people you see around the world in quite senior positions that have come from origins in and around that very, very small sort of a group of people who came out of, let's be honest with it, there was conflict and there was tough times and there was rationing and there was war and there was a whole bunch of things. But on the wall behind you, it says do hard stuff. You look at how many people have been successful because their origins weren't easy. So I think I'm really proud to have been part of that. I don't like the fact that some of it was mired in conflict and war and unnecessary war, if you ask me, about resources and control, actually,
Yeah.
not about what it was purported to be at the time, which was race and that kind of thing. It wasn't about that. It was about control of mineral resourcing, and that's been proven and agreed with. So some great people came out of a tough time. Which I think is the premise of some of your and my conversations already.
Yeah, look, I when you the one thing I'll say about Zimbabweans and Zambians even as well. Having been there numerous times myself now, it's amazing how resilient they are. And I don't think they, I think two things that came out of that, and it ties back to the do hard stuff. Number one, they become very resilient. So when they encounter, I'll just use simple examples, when they encounter currently today, 8 or 9 hours a day without electricity, they just march on, right? They don't think about it. They don't really complain about it. They just
So
carry
true.
on. And here, well, I'm in Costa Rica now, but in the U.S., you would your power goes down for 8 minutes, and you're calling the hotline to complain that your refrigerator is warming up,
Exactly,
and so
exactly.
I think they're number one, they're resilient, and number two, you find it's interesting. You find that they're most of the people are not very controversial anymore. They just really, I always say the young people there, our teams have the average age is 26 and a half. I always say they really would just want good Wi-Fi, the electricity to work, and a nice cup of coffee. If they could just get those three things, they would be like, hey, we're good. So that kind of back to kind of spinning back, I think, man, your father just amazed, it's hard for us to imagine loading up in a car with how many children were in your family? Was it how many kids?
No, at that stage I was just one, but my mum was pregnant with my younger brother.
Okay, even worse. Here you are, load up your son at four, your wife who's pregnant, and have to drive which is most people don't know, that's probably what 1500 miles or so
Oh,
drive,
easy.
and load up with $250 and unsure of what your next game plan is, right? Not really having and just driving. So wow, yeah, that and your father must have made him unbelievably resilient as he experienced other obstacles too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a lovely way of talking about it when you talk about resilience. My dad was he sadly passed away now, to a very surprised stomach cancer at 67, so very young.
Wow.
But we lost him very quickly because he had a tumor that wasn't presenting, as anything except a sort of a slightly sore stomach, and nobody was worried about it. And then it just unraveled very quickly. But we miss him every day, and he actually used to lecture at the British universities, and he worked in his later years. He worked for the British military on a lot of sort of post-traumatic stress and active servicemen coming back and entering into normal life again. And he talked very, very fondly about the people that he'd encountered from a very young age in the military that was then, because there were a lot of guys, and you would have heard of some of the names of people like the Salu Scouts and the Grey Scouts and the SAS. And there was a big hybrid of these really well-trained, well sort of put together young weapons, basically, that were human. And they still had to reintegrate into society after that time, and he used to talk about how they went and found them, and the hybrid vigor, the vigorousness of a human, he said, was always influenced by the more different backgrounds that you can put into a little melting pot. So we would have Scottish Highland servicemen who could run for hours in the Highlands, and they would get to Africa, fall in love with the bush, and then be much better on horseback than the locals, and they would teach those people, and the locals would then say, "Well, let me teach you how to track some animals in the bush so you don't run out of food." And then someone would be a marksman from, the US or something, and come out, and or he would have been a sniper in the Falklands, and he comes out and teaches everybody how to be a sniper. And suddenly these guys just had this incredible array of influences and influencers in their lives, and that took them into a different mindset. And I think that mindset was shown in two or three areas. One, in leadership, in a lot of senior businesses. Those people went on and led other people because of exactly what you said. They didn't mind the obstacles or the tough times. That's when they got better. And this is fully documented and actually quite interesting, into the creative industry. So some of the most amazing exports out of South and Southern Africa have been creative directors from ad agencies into roles around the world, because that experience of war and suffering, etc., and difficult times made them much. Do you remember the TV show MacGyver?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Much quicker to put something together out of nothing. And that was a huge effect on your personal creativity and how you could come up with concepts and ideas and things like that. I mean, what an amazing thing to f find out many years later that people in amazing positions around the world, and I'm talking about founders of advertising agencies that were bought by some of the biggest companies in the world, had very quiet, humble individuals in them driving the power of the creative resources that they used. And a lot of those guys came out of that era of conflict, which has been incredible.
You know, that's an interesting phenomenon. You know, I was sitting here thinking, here in Costa Rica, which is really definitely not third world. It's definitely second tier, and you know, there are improvements around. But also when I think about, and I'm really thinking like when something goes wrong at someone's house in, say, Harare, or you know, even here in Costa Rica. Or a car, let's say the car break. It's amazing that they figure out how to do stuff. Like, you know, my car's broke. I just need to take it to the auto mechanic and get it repaired, right? Well, they don't have those kind of resources, so they're like, well, let me go sort it out. And the next thing you know, they got the car running. Like, what'd you do? Oh, I just, replaced the transmission with a 67 Volkswagen VW Bug, and I stuck it in my Ford truck. And you're like, what? How does that work? And I see that a lot. And I think it's because, Bob, as you pointed out, they have this creativity within them that says, I just need to figure this out. And that translates into running in a business environment as an entrepreneur, as a creative. When you come across these obstacles, well, I mean, we've got 1500 plus employees now, team members we call them, and we've got a big group of people that we work with. And when a problem comes up, you just can't say, oh well, that's it, or wrap it up, shut down shop. You just got to figure it out. You got to have a way forward. And I think that's because of things you're talking about. When you've been through those circumstances, it just makes you better. And Zimbabweans for sure. And I'm sure the same thing in Cape Town, coming out of that apartheid area, that really made that evident too.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I would say there's quite a lot of spillover. So I like to talk about Southern Africans because, like you said, even Namibians and Mozambicans, Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe. There's the Zimbabwean farmers got kicked out of Zimbabwe at a time when, the government were trying to punish them for things that had happened in the past, and then realized that the people who made the best food were the farmers. Now they're asking them to all come back. And those people had gone on and they were farming sugarcane in Mauritius very successfully, sugarcane in Zambia very successfully, sugar beets had started some incredible farms and operations very, very quickly because they just moved on to the next thing, it's like
Yeah, exactly.
just
That's
get out there and do
100%.
something,
Well, you're right. I mean, you're taking, well, and if you go back, as they call Zimbabwe the breadbasket of Africa, right? It not only had all of the natural resources, but it had all these farming resources, the exports they were having in maize and tobacco and all of the various other agriculture. I mean, I know today they're like one of the largest producers of blackberries, right? And or blueberries. They make these amazing blueberries, and they're, I always say they seem like the size of a peach. But you're right. You take those same people and you move them to another country, and they're just going to find success. And I think that's what this hard stuff does for you. You go through these trials and errors, and I always use, sometimes I talk about my stuff. I mean, I've been completely broke twice, and I don't think I could do what I do today had I not gone through that and realized all these crazy mistakes I made. Sometimes you just have to make them. But what comes out of that is that those resilient people, like your father, like the farmers, like yourself, that came out of difficult circumstances, and you're like, hey man, I just gotta figure it out. I just gotta get it done. Well, how would you tie that into, I didn't obviously play any type of sports like you did, but I even go back to my American football, and I look at especially those high school years. We had a really tough coach, and he was actually a prisoner of war. He was on the death baton march in Germany. He went from 200 pounds down to about 90 pounds carrying another comrade, and he ended up being our high school football coach. I actually was he was one of my he was my one of my top mentors ever. He just translated things that he did into, I don't care that it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit, or what is that, 42 or something Celsius. And he says, just come on, get back on the field. We got to keep going. I remember one time my finger was all, I think it was dislocated or something. And he goes, here, get the trainer over here and just put some tape on it. I'm like, what? And they did. They just, in the middle of the game, they just taped it together. And today you would probably go to the hospital and get X-rays, you know. And he was just like, well, just put tape on it. So, and obviously, I'm talking about some very minimal, limited experiences I had. But man, you were 10 years, I believe, in playing rugby at the professional level. What lessons did you learn from that? Because, I mean, that's a tough sport, and I can't imagine the lessons that you've learned from that have translated into your business career as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a great question, and I appreciate it. I mean, I look at obviously I love all sports, and I watch a lot of NFL. And I was watching a documentary on Aaron Rodgers, you know, on his comeback and his injuries, and I just see exactly the same stoic attitude. You know, like he's gone there. I think he torn his Achilles, and he was like, "Well, I'm going to be back on this date." And they're like, "Well, that doesn't fit into how we're going to rehab you." And he said, "Well, I'm telling you the date. However
That's
you want to do it,
the
I don't mind. That's the
date.
date." And maybe it's those kind of people. You know, the got to be a little bit bullheaded. You got to be a little bit sort of self-assured, but you got to be resilient. I think that you know, to play professional sport, where I came through it was quite different because rugby wasn't professional, so it was an amateur game to start, and then it became professional as I started to play it. So I got into it because I liked the game. I didn't get into it because there was ever a career in rugby, you know, which is a very different reason to get into a sport, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
And then
absolutely. Yeah.
suddenly you find yourself in it, and they're saying, okay, we'll pay you, and you know, not paying you retirement money by any means. So you're gonna have to work afterwards. So you have a very different attitude to, you know, you're like, I'm playing this because of the joy of playing it. So I'm just going to give everything, and the guys around me become your family, and you know, you put in time and effort into those relationships just as much as you do at home. Whereas I think in the modern day sport, you sort of, and I'm not detracting from it in any way, but you might make an $80 or $100 million decision, you know, that as a young 22 or 23-year-old guy, that's going to shape the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, whereas we were making lots of little decisions. I'm here, we're working hard, that went okay, let's go. I'm here, we're working hard, that went okay, let's go. Or that went well, or we won that, great. Back next year, I'm here, we're working hard, let's go. You know, so it was never really a if I keep doing this, I can retire and never have to do anything again. It was just like, we want to win because there's other people on the field and we don't like losing. And
I
I
think
think
that's
that
a
attitude was a bit
different.
different. Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally different than today. You know, now you dislocate your finger, and I might have to sit out for a month while that thing heals because, ooh, I'm worth $40 million a year, you know, so
Yeah, and
I
that's why I
can't take
say
those chances.
I don't blame the players. I get it. You know what I mean? It's like having an amazing opportunity to do something that you really want, and then, you know, whether it's an insurance or a coach who needs you for later games in the season, suddenly those are influences which are very different. So I think the one thing I will say that translates into work and life is that, you know, if you have the right people around you and you're willing to put up with you know, other good people trying to do the same sort of thing and work with them, it's quite easy to translate that straight into a business environment because you can have a conversation with someone and say, hey, there's the easy way and there's the hard way, and the easy way is gonna, you know, we're gonna get there, and it's gonna be paper thin, and we're gonna fall off a cliff on the hard way. We're gonna build up something that in a year is gonna be much bigger, and so on and so forth. And you know, I work at a consultancy. We've got a South African founder, and we build incrementally. You know, we build on consulting revenue. We buy and build other businesses into that so that our consulting advice and revenue can be fulfilled by good businesses that we find. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
the fundamentals don't change. And we do more of that better every year. And for me, that resonates with who I am and what I am and what I would want to do. It's like, hey, we're building a team. Okay, this year we didn't have a great quarterback or running back, or in rugby it's a fly half or a fullback. It's okay, let's go and find one, and we'll work as hard as we can this season until we get to, but everyone's going to have to pitch in a little bit, and then next year we're going to go and buy a superstar, and we're going to integrate them, but we're not going to let them be a superstar who isn't part of our DNA, because that's going to make our business fall apart. And that translates a lot more to my day, where it was amateur first. to someone else would be making that decision for me. Now it's like, we got a group of partners. If we buy a business, it's like, hey, I need to know about you. I want to know how your business works on our side. How can I help you? How can I integrate? How can you work with me? And then we all find that out pretty quickly. And then suddenly you're on the same road.
Yeah, you know that's that. Actually, our COO is in town. We came to our or he came down to visit our office here in Costa Rica. We were talking about last night how our leadership team has transformed in the last 4 years. We've had some changes, replacements, and we've leveled up, if you will, right? We were looking for the better fullback or the flyback, or we were looking for the right person, the quarterback, whatever that is. And because you are constantly building that team, and I think I've never really thought about that analogy, but you can go out and get Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or whoever you want and put him on a team, but if he doesn't have somebody to catch the ball, if he doesn't have somebody to block for him on the front line, it really doesn't matter how good he is, right? I mean, it's irrelevant. He's going to be on his back most of the time, and he's not going to be able to make progress. And I think that's what translates so well into building those team as a business leader or a business owner. You're always looking to say, man, who's missing from our team? Who doesn't
That's
fit on
exactly.
our team, right? I think that's super important.
Exactly. No, I think you make a great point. Like when I look at it from a and we've got a succession and leadership group, and we talk to the young people coming through, and I really take pride when you see young, smart, gifted, talented people who've also got that underlying, because you can just see people who are willing to work hard, can't you? Because their output is better, their communication's better, their attitude's better, their time in the seat is better. They're around you because they want to be part of it. And if you're going to drag someone with you into a conflict, remember you can't be looking forward and backwards at the same time. So there's just no point. And if you don't have to drag that person with you, then right, we're shoulder to shoulder, we're going in this, and it makes a difference. And I see it with young people who join our business, and you can almost like there's nine light bulbs, and I can see seven of them are glowing and two aren't. And I know that those two are not going to be part of the decorations for next year. You know what I mean? Because when they needed, the light bulb's not on. And it's quite I'm sure I'm mixing metaphors there, but it's quite easy to see the kind of people you want on your team in business or in sport.
Yeah, and then you look at the people that have gone on to be successful yourself. I think of guys like Roger Staubach, old Cowboy quarterback who's built a massive empire in the real estate. You can look at people, the John Elways. I look at the Joe Gibbs, who went on to with racing, and all these guys had this sports background. I think sports brings to it, and then I just kind of thought of somebody who had a South African crossover as well as a UK crossover. You take Winston Churchill. I read about his stories, where he was fighting in the Boer Wars and in South Africa, and how he was captured and escaped as a prisoner. And you're thinking, well, hell, when all that stuff started happening in World War II, he was like, ah, not a big deal. I did this back in World War One, and I think there was, so these tough guys came out of these circumstances and use that resilience. We talked about that a number of times, but use that resilience to really make that impact. It was funny, you were talking about building a team. I don't know if you watched it. I usually catch it on a plane, the Ted Lasso series about the soccer. And this guy's always tried to take these personalities, and I mean, it's a comedy, right? It's not a true story, but he's taking all these personalities and he's trying to build this team. And I think it's no different in you running a business, right? You're trying to build the team.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the one thing that sticks out there for me is the team's incredibly important, but when you have these personalities, these big people that you're talking about, and those are huge names in NFL, in any sport, in global sport. And even I recognize him, not having grown up with NFL, but I've seen them because I've seen the statues outside the flipping stadiums, and then I've been to watch the games and that kind of thing. I also think we sometimes need to remind younger people that these days that there are a few voices in your head, and everybody's got them. So don't feel bad when you go, okay, well, if I don't do this and just listen to this bad person, I won't get a salary, and then I'm done. Because you're not done. That's 1 hard month, or that's maybe a change of role or whatever it is. It's not the end of your life. And because we're living on screens and telephones and interactions that seem so big to us, I think we give up quite early. I think I see a lot of people just not sort of happy to put in the grind, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying, it's like, remember, if everybody on whatever Instagram is saying, hey, drink this drink and it'll be a lot easier for you to lose weight, and you drink the drink but you don't go to gym, or you don't do the walk your 10,000 steps, or you don't go and go for a jog or whatever it is, and you go, oh, it's never going to work. And you build this false personality of a person who's just happy to give up at everything. And I sometimes even I got to remind myself, I'm like, the world is set up for you to think I'm probably going to fail quite soon, so I better just hunker down and take my little salary and be a nothing. And I think that's what we shouldn't believe. I think we've all got the capacity to be a Winston Churchill, to be an entrepreneur, to be a great father, to be a great leader in the community. Those are just as beneficial. Being a leader in your local community and inspiring 10 kids to actually give a damn and go and get themselves a degree and get out of a Zimbabwe or a downtown flipping some rundown city. That's exactly the same as being a Winston Churchill. Different circumstances, different things happen, and those leaders are they're brimming in all of us.
It's interesting because I think sometimes sports also gives us that false sense of security. I can use, I think in the US, to me, the one of the examples is how we, a lot of young people, especially in a lot of these low income communities, they worship an NBA star. They put these guys on a level, and it's levels of which they're never going to achieve, right? Quite honestly, right? It's just not going to happen. These are guys that are just at a whole different level. But you're right. We need to focus on the impact you can make in your family. How do you be a good dad? How do you be a good, if I'm gonna, my dad used to always say, if you're gonna be the janitor, just be the best janitor at the company. Just be as good as you can, right? And he had a ninth grade education. He just knew that you needed to really figure out how to be the very best you could be. But Bob, that's a good point, because we're looking at it as if we're failures, and especially young people, because we haven't achieved money, fame, success, notoriety, whatever that is, instead of just saying, hey, I've found success in this little area that I have. And wow, we could go on and on about this. You mentioned about the weight loss thing. Man, I mean, yeah, you just gotta get up some days and put your shoes on and go for a 2 mile walk. You may need to walk around the block.
And build from there.
And
Build from
start.
there, because
That's right.
you know what happens. I promise you, you sit down in your chair, you get a bad email from someone, and you've lost a client, and then you're on your phone, and your team's lost, and your wife texts you and says, the little Jimmy's hurt his knee at school, and you go like, oh, and I've got to pay for all this, and is it worth you want to walk off the edge of a cliff, you know what I mean? But remember, all those if you don't let those messages in. Here's the first thing. Don't let the messages in. Okay.
100%.
So find a way to control your communication. And then you go back to all of those messages. It's like, okay, well, we've lost that client because he gave me trouble anyway. So that's cool. Now I've got a bit more space to fetch another client.
More time. I got
Little
more
Jimmy.
time. Yeah.
Yeah. Little Jimmy bumped his knee, because that's nice, because he was doing too much sport anyway. Let's get him a rest and we'll do some catching practice with him or whatever it is. And you just build the positives around that. And I think that's what sport teaches you. Because if you don't get up, a bigger guy's going to run past and stand on you, and you're gone. And I do think that your great example of people from, Zimbabwe and that part of the world have got no right, okay, compared to the gifts the rest of us are given to succeed, and they have. So what are we doing wrong? We should be leaping, leaping 10 stories ahead. And the beauty about that is, it just, again, we go back to the point, we've all got it in us. We've all got it in us, and if we just get out there, and all we need is a few friends, the love and respect of our friends and families, and a little bit of good luck, and we can
Well,
live a good life.
and I don't know how you feel about this. Well, let me just ask the question. If you're going to pick your inner circle, I'm not even going to say five. I'm going to say three. How important is it about the three? And I'm going to have you go back and think about your days at with the Springboks. I'm going to think about your business today. I'm going to think about your family, your friends, your really those confidant inner circles. Tell me about those three people, maybe two, that you had along the way, and why are those people important?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, my father was incredibly important in my growth, and I always go back to him because he was a community doctor. So, I was a community sportsman, if you want. So I'll never forget going into church on a Sunday morning, and then, the whispers, they'd be, "Oh, that's the doctor's children, and they play sport," and you know what I mean. And so that sort of, the fact that there were eyes looking at me from a very young age made me more ready for anything that happened. As a young kid, suddenly your name's in the newspapers because your team's won a championship or done whatever it is, and so I was ready for that, but ready in a humble way, because he was always, "Well, that doesn't make you anything. It just makes more people look at you in case something goes wrong. So let's prepare for that, and let's prepare in the right way." So hugely positive like that. And I think I transitioned from my dad being the guy who helped me the most to a university level. It wasn't my university coach, because I was trying to explain, you play in a club environment, and you play all these clubs, and then you sort of qualify to play in a team above it. It's a bit like being an All-American concept. For people who are watching from America, you would have the NFL, and then the All-American team is our sort of national team, and then that team would play a few times a year. And at that level, I had a fantastic coach, who was just really pedantic about the time and effort that he put into people. He was always writing motivational quotes. He was always saying, "Hey, I think this is a thing you can work on." He would come around to your house. He would make sure your folks knew that there was someone else to be looking after you. He just really took it seriously, even at that level where it wasn't life and death for him. He just was passionate about the game. And I've always thought to myself about what a big, massive impact he's had on my life. And I've also been blessed. I mean, I've married a really good woman who's believed in me, and raised a great family, and been around. Like, you said it. It's not all, rose-tinted glasses out there. The tough times do come, and when they are, you want someone strong next to you who believes that you can create a future out of whatever you've got. So I've had some amazing friends and people, but those three stand out because they've been close to me for the longest time.
No doubt it's easy for me to even go. My father, even though mom and dad were divorced, and he lived 1,000 miles away, he was my hero. He died early, 62, kind of had a heart attack, died a big smoker. And you see those, you see your grandfather, I see a high school football coach, I see these people that really help shape who we are. And I think that's why it's important. I was also thinking of my inner circle today. I don't let the people into my life that I don't want in my life, right? I'll give you an example, because he was the one that connected us. You take an Ibram Vanderwalt. I would like to have 10 guys like that, right? I'm sure you would too.
You could take on the
100%,
world.
because what I found about him, and I see guys like him, and I want to be more like him, because he's always trying to help you, not what can he get from you.
Well,
And
I'm gonna jump in there because there's a lesson here for young people just listening in, is that people think that networking is finding a group of people and asking them for what you want. And it gets this bad rap because everybody's like, oh, you know, I'm going, you know what networking is finding a big group of people and finding out what you can give them.
Yep.
Because it comes back 10,000 times over, but only if you're genuine about the giving. And Ibn apps he lives that like you won't believe, because he goes and he finds out, hey, that's what you're trying to achieve. I love your journey, love you as a person. How can I help? And then you're thinking about him as this person who's got this amazing depth of talent and background. I mean, he's one of the most celebrated, you know, clinicians in the country, if in this country, if not in the world. And he's still got time for the young kids who want a little bit of advice and want some time to spend with him. So I absolutely agree with you. And maybe that's a point, you know, maybe as leaders, we should always be saying, right, how can I throw something back? What is the best way I can give that resonates?
Well, the world is always trying to tell us, go get what you can, take this, grab this, get this for you. It's a very selfish world we live in. And if you go back to team sports, even, Bob, and you take you on the Springboks, you had to give your team all you had to win that championship. Ebron has done an amazing job of, like you say, networking is definitely not about what can you get out of someone, but what can you have to offer? And I think that's where we end up today. And we talk about doing hard stuff. Some of that stuff is how can I give back, not can I take away? And we've intertwined a bunch of things. I think young people should really stop and look who they've let into their inner circle. Are they encouragers? Are they people who are celebrating your wins, or are they always jealous of your wins? And they're like, well, that Bob, I can't, you know, he's just lucky. He's just lucky. Instead of, man, have you seen Bob? Well, he's amazing in his, Ebron's amazing. That's the kind of people you need to celebrate and find yourselves around. So, hey, listen, I know we've taken up a lot of your time, and we're maybe more than 5,000 to 6,000 miles away, but Bob, this has been really good, and again, wasn't a whole lot about sports. It was really a lot about just taking some of the lessons we've learned and really translating those into your marriage, right? I mean, I've been blessed to be married 31 years, and I've got an amazing wife, but it wasn't easy, right? I didn't wake up every day and I'm in love every day. It was a lot of hard work, and you know that. I'm sure you could say the same thing.
Absolutely. I think the hard work on relationships, on time, on the things that you really want to achieve in is probably the most important thing. But it's been fantastic to connect with you. I mean, I could talk for hours, I think, JW. I look forward to listening to more of the series as well, and I look forward to catching up with you in the UK. I think the takeaways here for me are that the more we talk about this stuff and celebrate the good people and learn from the good people, the more we can actually get pillars and verticals that we can implement as leaders and as people and as family men and community people like that. There's no one answer, but it certainly is good to celebrate, you know, good paths in this environment. We'll have more good people as opposed to people just closing the door, retreating in, and pointing fingers and being nasty about the thing. We need to be communal in our giving. And I think I'm delighted to be a small part of that with you. And I thank you for all your time.
Yeah, no, thank you, Bobby. I'm gonna start calling you Bobby. It's gonna be stuck in my head. You're gonna hear me say, "Hey,
That's good. That's
Bobby."
good. That's good by me. I love it.
Well, listen, this has been great. You know, I one little thought that came into my mind. I love listening to Craig Groeschel has a leadership podcast, and he one of the things he talked about is pre-deciding. He says that's a real key element is pre-deciding. Like, and what he meant was if you're gonna go work out, set your gym shoes out, your workout clothes out, and when you get up in the morning, just put them on and go work out. But it's also pre-deciding when you get into an argument with your wife, how are you going to react? It's pre-deciding all of these various aspects, and I think that's what we're talking about here is kind of having an understanding when you go through these hard times to make those decisions. So, look, Bobby, this has been fantastic, and hey,
Good
I'm
man.
going to see you soon in Béziers. And
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I'm going to my first rugby game. I you know that my
I'm
problem
hoping
is
you're the good luck that we need. I love it.
Well, I'm careful there because the next thing you know, I'm going to be making I'm making reservations for what is it, the 2027 World Championships. I'm probably going to be at the game with my Springbok jersey on. So yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. I love it. I love it. That's
Bob,
going to be
thank
great.
you.
Thanks, JW. Great
Appreciate you
to see you.
joining
I look forward to
us.
seeing you soon.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Great to talk with you. Have a great one.
Good man. Cheers, bud.